Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Now, Lori, you read a quote to me last week. I don't know if you have that still available. I'm not going to ask you to read it right now in case you want to drop your headset and go find it, because I feel like it really captured well sort of the place you came to spiritually. So open
you
that
want
up.
To paraphrase it? I can paraphrase it.
Okay, yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Ultimately, what I was experiencing was this feeling that something wasn't right within me, right? Something was off. And it goes back to that longing to know God and to know more. So that's what it was. It was Samvega is what they call it, Samvega. And it means, they tell this story to describe it about how they give a dog a bone. And he rips the bone apart. But he realizes there's no meat on it, but he's been gnawing on it forever. Finally discovers there's no meat on it, so he turns away from it and goes looking elsewhere. So Samvega means pretty much this term to turn away from. And I felt like that's what had happened with me with the church. You know, I'd really ripped that bone to shreds. And finally, you know, I started to look away for other things that fed me. And that journey's so internal, and that journey through Eastern studies, through looking for human consciousness, and discovering, because as Mormons, we're so clear on who we are. You know, I am the spirit, I am living in a body, I will someday reunite with it forever. It's very clear. But I knew that there was something off. And what I had mostly discovered, that I think the huge freeing revelation for me, was that my spirit is not my mind. My spirit is not my mind. My thoughts are not to be trusted. Those are the things that get me really depressed. In fact, during this period of time, I ended up driving a carload full of kids to the Oakland Temple on a field trip. So I had little kids in my car, and we were caravanning about an hour away to the temple, and I took the wrong exit. And if you know Oakland, you don't want to be in the wrong part of town with a car full of kids lost. I didn't want to have to get out of the car with a bunch of kids asking for directions. I was stressed out and a little panicked, and I knew all the other parents would be waiting for me at the temple, worried. So I pulled off the freeway on an off-ramp. I ended up in front of a van, which is really weird. You don't see a lot of vans in Oakland, kind of an urban area. It was like a family minivan. And the bumper sticker on the back of it said, "Don't believe everything you think." And it was kind of like a signpost from God, like it lit up. And I could hear the thoughts going on in my mind. And all of a sudden, I could sense that there was an observer behind the thoughts, these panicked thoughts. Everyone's going to be upset with you. Everyone's going to be worried. You've got to get these kids there. You're lost. Something bad's going to happen, right? The world's out to get me. But when that realization hit me with that bumper sticker, right, "Don't believe everything you think," and I could hear that stream, I started laughing. I saw how funny it was that I took my thoughts so seriously, and it instantly flipped around, was able to find my way precisely right there. And I was laughing at it, but that was huge for me.
So even though you mentioned, you know, In Sacred Loneliness or some of the other books that you read and the intellectual stuff on New Order Mormon, I guess what you're saying is that those weren't the fundamental things that turned you away. It was more of a spiritual feeling and a connection. Is that right?
Yes, and I don't want this to sound arrogant, because I know that it does when I say this, and that's not at all how I mean it, but I felt, honestly, that I was outgrowing the church, that the teachings couldn't keep up with me, because I wanted so much more meat. And for a long time, that manifested as oh, I wish they would give us more modern day revelation. You know, I want it. I want to know more. And then it turned into just looking elsewhere for it. And becoming, I think the difference too is that within the church, I was always often given ways to learn more and things to do. But I was, like, they'll say repent, and here are the steps to repentance. But that's an internal process. And never once was I taught what real repentance was until I'd worked with it on a metaphysical level, you know. It became so internal. And I discovered that really learning about spirituality can only be learned experientially. And so when we spend so much time within the church learning about things or learning the history of things or learning stories that don't necessarily teach us how to learn these things experientially in our lives. So, yeah, it was twofold that way.
And was there a part of you that sort of felt as Lehi did in Lehi's dream, but just in the opposite direction, that you had experienced this rapture of joy and of meaning, and you wanted to share that with Dan?
Yeah, and I couldn't. And I couldn't find the words to connect us, and I couldn't. I felt more like I was off on a hippy-dippy trip on my own, you know, like, and I was going to be lonely for a long time. I just didn't feel that anybody spoke both of my languages, both Mormonism and this newfound language that I had. So we ended up in counseling at that point.
Right. Now, before we talk about counseling, Dan, I imagine that you're feeling like the terms of your marriage have been violated. The hopes and dreams that you had were crumbling down, and what's next for Lori and her journey, and how is this going to destabilize our family? Do I have it right? And what would you add or take away from what I characterized?
I never had the fear that she was going to become like a lousy parent or anything because she didn't believe in Mormonism. I've never believed that Mormonism is the exclusive way to be a good person, to be a good parent, to raise good kids. That wasn't really the fear. What I feared is that, I feared that our languages were becoming too, it was almost like the Tower of Babel analogy where people like couldn't communicate anymore. And so they had to disperse, you know, they had to spread, you know, according to that story. And I thought, okay, are we just becoming two such fundamentally different people that living, even if we love each other, will living together just be too much of a challenge, of a problem? Can we do it? It was really more the practical sense. It wasn't, you know, I didn't think, you know, I never questioned her stability as a parent. That wasn't what the problem was. The problem was that we just weren't communicating anymore. And I had this fear that she wouldn't respect me anymore because, you know, there's a couple pet peeves I have when it comes to Mormonism or religion. I don't like self-righteousness at all. So when I see that a lot, especially among like people that might be considered faithful, true believing church members, I hate it. I can't stand it. And the flip side is that I hate the sort of like, I don't know if pride's the right word, but the sort of idea that sometimes you see among people who no longer believe that think that, oh, now I've got it figured out. And all these people who still believe are these idiots or whatever.
Right.
And so I was still projecting what I thought she was thinking. That's where I had this fear. I'm like, can a relationship work if my wife thinks I'm deluded, you know, or holding on to stuff? And what frustrated me is that in all our conversations, I was trying to make her understand that I wasn't unaware of all these problems. You know, it's not like I was like sticking my head in the sand or putting my hand over my ears and going, la, 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 right. I'm not listening. It was that I didn't, and I think we'll get to as we talk to our about our counseling in a little bit, but I didn't feel she was really understanding what Mormonism was to me. Her thought was, well, I learned this stuff and these are the conclusions I came to. Why aren't you coming to them? And I see this happen. I think this happens a lot. And it's human nature. I think people, we learn something and we think, and we want to share it, especially if it's meaningful to us. But you know, people speak different languages and have different things that speak to them and work for them. And so sometimes the things that really move you don't move the other person. And that, I loved a lot of the general ideas I was getting through her embrace of Buddhism. I didn't have any problem with that, but it didn't suck me in, you know, like, wow, the way it did her. And so I was just afraid we were becoming too different to effectively go forward as a family, as a husband and wife.
Right. So, Dan, how was counseling?
It was very funny. Okay, so we did not go through LDS at all, any LDS social services, which I thought would have been I didn't want to do that. I thought that'd be foolish to kind of put the church in a point to mediate something where it's part of the issue, you know?
Right.
Right. So we found, luckily, Laurie's business partner is a marriage and family therapist, and she obviously couldn't do it, but she referred to us to a friend. And so we went to see this guy, a very nice fellow. And what was really funny is that we told ourselves that we're not going to settle things about the church. We're going to see, you know, can we deal with this new difference plus these other problems that we've just had for years, and see if we can't kind of rebuild this whole thing, and make it work. And we didn't have to twist each other's arms because, you know, we both really wanted the marriage to work. I didn't really want a divorce. I don't think she really wanted a divorce. You know, we both really love our kids and, you know, we just knew we had a lot worth fighting for. And so we went, and what was really funny is when we ended up into it, we told ourselves we were going to talk about a lot of things. I'd say 90% of what we talked about was the church. And this poor guy knew nothing about Mormonism, you know, nothing at all. And so most of our sessions were us explaining to him what the church was, you know, what the teachings were, what the culture was.
Well, because he, you know, we were trying to explain to him why it was a problem that I didn't believe anymore, and he did. Because to the outside world, it's like, what's the big deal, you know?
Yeah. I mean, mixed faith, I mean, this happens all the time. I had a good friend who was raised Catholic, married a Jewish guy, and she was like, she was telling me about, oh, she's probably going to convert to Judah to being Jewish. I thought, oh, why are you doing that? She's like, well, I think it's important for kids and family to have a unified religion. And it was such a, like, it was like deciding what house or car to have, you know? It was like they weren't really that attached to it, and it was really hard to relate to coming from the Mormon world. The reason this worked, it was frustrating for a few appointments because I'm like, are we just paying this guy money to tell him to catch him up in the church, you know? What was really funny is we were probably getting our money's worth because I think he spent three times as much time as he did talking to us on the internet after we left trying to like figure all this stuff out and research it. But here's where I think a key part of the breakthrough was for us is that we'd been married 14 years at this point, and there was some basic stuff that we did not understand about each other, about how we each related to the church and why we believed. And that was really amazing. And I wonder, does this happen with a lot of LDS couples, especially Mormon couples tend to marry young? I think a lot of assumptions get carried into a Mormon marriage where you assume that the other has this testimony of these basics, Joseph Smith, restoration, blah, blah, blah. And you take that for granted and go forward with your life. But, you know, people have really have very unique ways in which they believe. Unique things have happened in their life in terms of why they believe and what they believe. And I don't think Laurie and I understood fully each other at our roots, what our roots were related to Mormonism. And so as we would tell the counselor our stories, she would tell hers, I would tell mine. I remember listening to her thinking, I didn't know that. Huh. You know, 14 years of marriage, I didn't know that that's what – and I think to be general about it, I didn't realize how traditional her Mormon upbringing really was. I had thought it was kind of untraditional because she had this really kind of liberal, independent mother who was a convert and, you know, dad was a really kind guy. I kind of envisioned her upbringing as a little more similar to mine, which right. It really wasn't.
Right.
In terms of what the church was as a culture and as an expectation, and how she related to it, it was very humbling. I thought, I've been married to this woman 14 years. I didn't know this.
Right.
Well, it was something magical about sitting with a third party person talking about these things. Dan said things I'd never heard before. I guess you just assume that your partner knows these things because right. Feels like you've talked about everything, but and the counselor did comment. He kept commenting about, I'm so impressed. You are listening so well to each other. But we were both just sitting there like astounded that, yeah. Wow, I never knew that. I really fully enjoyed sitting and listening to Dan tell his story. So
isn't it amazing what couples don't talk about?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's where I said, I think Mormonism almost provides, I don't want to say a false foundation, but like I said, I think when two people enter in and they say, okay, I'm marrying another member, I just think there's these assumptions that happen that leave out a lot of key parts of understanding that person. And, you know, of course we married at 21. You don't think about that. You know, it's... But it was, you know, looking back to it, it was really, it's really kind of amazing we made it 14 years without understanding some of this stuff.
Right. Yeah. So did you come out of therapy fixed or with a new lease or how'd that work?
how did it go? Because I think, Laurie, you were the one that first voiced that maybe we're just done.
Well, I had had a big epiphany. I had been to a retreat at the meditation center, and I had this big epiphany, which was basically that to have more faith in Dan, that somewhere deep down, even though consciously I knew he's intelligent, he's smart, and I knew all of those things and I respected him, deep down I was still thinking like, there was a slight lack of respect for him not investigating all of this, not being willing to do that.
And that's very common. It's very common for the disbeliever to just to think their spouse is being willfully ignorant or blind. I hear it all the time. It's one of the most common themes. They feel the believing spouse feels degraded because they feel like the disbeliever thinks they're stupid for not seeing the facts.
Well, I didn't think he was stupid, and I didn't want him to feel that way. But we both thought that about the other. We both thought the other wasn't going to respect us, and that became clear as we talked. We both wanted to be respected by each other. But what I came to realize was that as I learned about his story and the way that he related to the church, he was being smart, he was being intelligent, that staying to the church was just as viable of a path for him and where he was at as it was for me leaving. And that he needed support and love to follow his own path within the church. And I need to not only just give him, you know, permission, which sounds lame, I don't like that word, but I needed not just tell him it's okay for you to go to church and take the kids, but I needed to help get the kids ready and talk to him about it and what did you like today? And I needed to stop disregarding his experience as valid. So when I was able to find that kind of space, and instantly when I realized that, it was almost instantaneous for me. All the grating and the frustration seemed to melt away. Hmm. And the funny thing is that, you know, if you make space for somebody like that, it comes back to you like 100-fold. So it was really quick that we stopped having the grating in our conversations. And we started to morph into this space of, I'm going to support you, and you're going to support me, and we're going to have totally different paths. And while I want to understand where you are at spiritually and what you relate to, please share that with me. I really want to know. It's different than what I am going through and what I need. And that's okay. And together we can meet. But being married and loving each other means holding each other up, giving each other space and love. And ultimately, you get to make every decision in your marriage from two places, from either fear or from love. And before we'd been, everything had been, you know, deep down, there was a stickiness. There was this fear underneath it. You know, am I going to be doing this alone? Am I alone? And ultimately, marriage is this feeling of being one and being connected. So if you have totally opposite viewpoints, how do you find that connection? Well, we found it through supporting each other on individual paths.
But it feels like Dan had to give up the most, because, and this is how it's often framed. It's we had an agreement when we got married. These were the terms, you know, temple marriage, commitment to the church, going to the celestial kingdom, and Dan, it's easiest to feel like you got the worst end of the deal. You had to give up. You had to be the one that sacrificed. You had to suck it up. She's the one who did the bait and switch.
I don't think that at all. Well, I mean, not bait and switch for one, because she, here's part of why I was so disoriented in the whole switch is that, when we married, and for most of our relationship, even now, Laurie's been a better Mormon. You know, she's been a more spiritually driven, more faithful, you know. And I think I had this kind of immature notion that she was going to get me up there. You know,
right.
I'd ride her to the celestial kingdom, and I was. You know, I felt a lot of my life, I'm not a great Mormon. I had, you know, since I was a kid, I hated the fact that church people didn't like rock and roll. They would talk about it's the devil's music. I loved rock and roll. I thought that's stupid. And, you know, I've had a lot of disconnects with certain church theories and teachings. And I've always disliked a lot of the cultural stuff. And so when this switch happened, I think that's where I felt kind of like, okay, too much of a change has happened, because I can't be the good Mormon here in our relationship. That's not this doesn't work, you know. haven't you been paying attention? So that, you know, it sounds funny, of course, when I say that, but you know, the reality was I felt like I was, and what was scary to me is I was projecting ahead. Okay, what's going to life going to be look like is kind of, at least within the Mormon world, I'll be like a single parent, taking my kids to church or whatever activities. And I thought, I can't do that. I'm not that good.
So you had to suck it up.
So I thought, so.
You had to step up. Good,
yeah, and what was good about it in that sense is it did help me. I had to clarify to myself what did I really believe about Mormonism? Because, you know, basically, and what I think she heard in the counseling sessions and finally understood, and was the reason why I could deal with all this historical stuff and not say, oh, I've got to leave, is that none of that stuff was really key to what my relationship to the church was. You know, my relationship was that the Mormonism had this powerful impact, positive impact on my family, that it was something that I felt this certain attachment to and loyalty to, and I literally knew, because I just didn't grow up in a very Mormon-centric environment, that I had the strong feeling that my life was better because of my association with the church, with, you know, living, you know, making good decisions and that. And it didn't have anything to do really with what did Joseph Smith see in that grove and how many wives did he have and so forth. Those things were the backstory, but they weren't what connected me to it. So I was always able to read the history as this academic interest. And I find church history totally fascinating. I love the unvarnished warts and all stuff. It's crazy stuff, and crazy is what it should be, you know, because that's humanity, that's people. But that's not the way most relate to it. You know, it's the church uses its history as this devotional tool. That's not what it was for me. And so, you know, but back to your point, I didn't feel cheated that way. What I did have to do is I had to figure out, okay, what do I really believe and what am I going to do? Because I can't, I've got to be responsible for it. I've got to be responsible for what I believe and what I'm going to have the kids participate in, and go forward there. And I don't think I lost a lot.
How about your place in the celestial kingdom?
You know, when I, that experience I told you about earlier, when I kind of had that feeling come over me,
right,
that it was going to be okay, I lost my fear of that. I lost my fear of what was going to happen. Because I've always had a little bit of a skepticism that, do we really know everything we think we know anyway? You know, is it going to be the detailed way that Mormon theology says it's going to be, or is that just the way people... I've always been able to have somewhat of a metaphorical view of things. And so I thought, okay, is that the way just people, you know, when Joseph had visions or Brigham had visions or whoever, are they just relating it in the way they think and understand it? Is it really going to be that way? So I really didn't have a lot of great attachments to specifics to it. And my general attachment to the idea of having our relationship continue, I felt okay after that experience. I just felt okay about it. I don't know how else to explain it. I lost my fear. I lost my fear of what it was going to be, and I felt this confidence that, you know, we can go forward with this. We can do this. And what helps a great deal is that she is still a very spiritual person, and has a lot of these wonderful new ideas that, as I'm learning more about, and we're kind of like, you know, it's kind of fun to think of how we can mesh this together for our family and make this kind of, you know, Mormon, Buddhist, whatever stew that, right. Who knows how it'll turn out, but, there's a lot of fun possibilities once you drop the fear. Can you take good things from these traditions and put them together into something, and not be too attached to a certain idea of a certain outcome?
Well, I really want to explore that. And Laurie, I know you probably want to jump in. Let me just ask one last question. It's going to seem like I'm belaboring the point, but you guys need to bear with me, because I have couples knock on my door literally or email me every week where the believing spouse basically says, I want to divorce my spouse because they've not kept up their end of the bargain. So I guess, Dan, I would love to have you make an argument, if you're comfortable doing it, to other believing spouses out there as to why they should not just take that route and just say, hey, I want to be married in the temple. I want to keep it simple. I want to have my kids raised with a partner who's believing and devoted to the church. So I'm going to cut my losses and run, find a faithful member, and live out my days, you know, because, you know, I love my partner, but but the gospel is the most important thing to me, and consequently, this marriage is over. Do you have? No, you laugh, but I mean, I get that every single week. I get that, and my question to you is: do you have a case for why a believer should reconsider that perspective?
Sure. A few thoughts on that. I'm not going to hold myself out as a church, the ultimate church doctrine expert. I'm unaware of any advice church leaders have ever given that a believer should leave their unbelieving spouse. I've never heard that. I don't think that's, this is a faith on me because I've never sat down with one of the apostles or first presidency, but I'm willing to bet if you got an audience with each of the 12 apostles in the first presidency and said, "Hey, I'm a believer, but my spouse doesn't believe. Should I leave him?" I'd be willing to bet that they would not push for that decision, for that course of action. A lot depends on the individual relationship. You know, does the non-believing spouse, are they completely disrespecting the believer and making it hard? I mean, there's a lot of variables, obviously. But in a relationship where two people still love each other and want to respect each other, but one doesn't have these beliefs, I don't think that's what the church wants to see happen. I don't think the church wants to see families broken apart. And I got that. We talked to our bishop, finally, after we kind of settled all this with ourselves. We felt, because Laurie was going to dial back her activity level, and we felt the bishop at least needed to know that and understand why. And so she met with him, and then I met with him later. And the message I got from him was just one of, you know, saying, look, your family is the most important. You're going to get whatever support you need from me, that your family and marriage stays together. You know, there was not a single hint of, are you sure you want to stick in this? So I don't think the church wants that, for one. For two, here's the problem. Okay, you leave a spouse who doesn't believe, find a new spouse who believes. There's absolutely no guarantee that they're not going to face the same problem going forward. Belief is such a fungible thing, and you never know what kind of experiences people are going to have in their life to change it. And even if you married somebody and say, and make it like clear up front, hey, if you ever disbelieve, I'll leave. that's not going to stop it. You know, that's, beliefs grow and change, and sometimes they stay within a certain sphere and sometimes they don't. So you're not getting any additional security there. You're trading, and you're ignoring the fact that you might have great things, other things with your spouse. You know, I mean, if I had said, okay, I can't stay with Laurie because she doesn't believe, I'll find a believer. Yeah, I'm sure I could have found a woman that probably would have been, you know, stronger in the church and stayed stronger. But gosh, I would have lost so many other great things that I had with Laurie, and I would have just traded new problems for old problems. So I don't think that was the right, in a practical basis, that wasn't really the right solution. But I think the main thing here, and this is my own belief, and one of the few things that I'd say I have a real strong testimony of, is I think God's love is very powerful. I think it's a lot more expansive than we often tell ourselves, especially within the LDS Church. The LDS Church, I think, is a good, I think LDS theology has a loving God for the most part, and, you know, has this God that wants people to be happy, and that's in the theology, but, you know, we overlay so many rules and things on it and convince ourselves that, you know, everything we do is, you know, if we do this wrong thing, we're going to lose blessings and everything, and I just don't think it's that way. And, if you have a spouse that's struggling to believe or doesn't believe, that doesn't mean God doesn't love that spouse, doesn't love you, and doesn't value your relationship. And I just don't think, I just don't see that in the hereafter, that that's going to be some sort of, that there's going to be a punishment for that. I think if you go forward in faith, and continue to build the good things that your family has, I really believe that's the right path. You know, of course, all things considering, if the rest of the marriage is good, if there's other problems, if people are disrespecting each other, I mean, that's kind of different, you know. But, you know, if you really have two people who love each other and the only problem is that one's lost their faith, I just don't find that a compelling argument. I think there's a lot of powerful reasons to stay. And I really believe that God would prefer that, you know, if that doesn't sound too bold.
No, and I'll just second that. I've had the good fortune of traversing the halls of church headquarters and speaking with some leaders there who have asked me not to share their names. And when I asked this exact question of someone whom our listeners would know their name, should a believing LDS spouse leave their non-believing spouse? That person was very quick to say that everyone needs to make that decision for themselves. I got the sense that they definitely didn't want people to stay in unhealthy relationships that were truly unhealthy. But I was definitely not given the impression that the direction is you definitely leave your spouse. And the impression that I was given was that you should do everything you could to make the marriage work and to stay committed to your spouse even when they stop believing. And that literally did come from amongst the highest levels of the church. So I'm just adding that as a brief anecdote to what you've already expressed. What's your reading, just finally on this point, what's your reading of Christ and, you know, the Savior and how he would respond to this situation in a marriage?
Well, you know, my read is that he spent his whole ministry trying to bring people together who had diverse interests and backgrounds and ideals. And, you know, his wasn't a ministry of, like, stick with the people that you believe like. You know, he was constantly telling people, accept others. You know, telling Pharisees to accept the sinners and the what do they call them, the publicans, whatever.
Right.
I just forget that term. But, you know, his life wasn't based on keeping people apart and segregated by what they believed. That's total counter to what, at least to what I read, his life was about. And, you know, when you have a marriage, you're two different people. Even when you're a young Mormon who you think you share this theology and you're so young that you haven't had a lot of diverse life experiences, you're different people. And, you know, the marriage is going to be hard. You know, the best marriages are hard work. And, you know, I really think that when you get, you know, especially I think since probably, I mean, you could tell Vince better because you talked to so many people, but I think a lot of these faith crises don't happen in the first year of marriage. I think mostly they're happening, you know, 10, 20 years of marriage is my sense. You know, people have been together a while and have kids. And how much do you have really that's good and working at that point? That's worth throwing away because you have different views about what Joseph Smith did 100, 200 years ago or whatever. You know, it just, you know, it doesn't really work. Now, I'm being a little flip. You know, the rest of the relationship does have to be working. And if you have, you know, spouses are disrespecting each other, doing things to hurt each other, I mean, there may be good reasons to consider a divorce if the relationship was unhealthy anyway. And, you know, I think there may be situations where maybe the church was the only thing keeping people together.
Right.
So I can't make this like 100% prescriptive. Everybody's got their own situation. But what I would say is that if you're somebody that had this great relationship until you hit this belief roadblock where one of them lost their belief, you know, I just don't think that's worth breaking up all the good things that you'd have in a marriage to break up, to say nothing of the fact of what it does to the kids. I think that's a lose-lose scenario, really. And if you're going to base it on what Jesus was trying to do and teach, I don't find the justifications in that for doing that, you know, to be totally honest.
Sure. Okay, so let's, Laura, you were going to jump in. Was there something you were wanting to follow up on?
Just to jump on what he was saying, I think that what ends up happening in a faith crisis is that ends up being a tool to either work out all of the other things and actually grow in your marriage if you're willing to take a look at yourself, or it can really split you up. But what it did for us was, you know, it taught us what was really important. So as, you know, you were saying that he ended up with the short end of the stick, and in that situation, I totally saw it through his eyes. What would I feel like if I were the faithful one and he came to me? And I was really careful and gentle in the changes that I made. I knew that the one thing, you know, you can't control or love. You can't control other people's beliefs and thoughts. And I wanted the freedom to have my own beliefs and thoughts. And I wanted the freedom to really pursue and explore this seeking that I was doing. And in order to have that, I knew not to rock the boat, right? And I didn't really, it wasn't important to me to go changing my lifestyle. So I lived the Mormon lifestyle. So while he was losing, in his imagination, he was losing something, that we were the same when we never were. So a lot of what we were living before was not even real because we didn't even understand where we were coming from. But I was really careful. I didn't drink. I didn't run out changing my lifestyle. I kept the word of wisdom, all those things, so that I could keep it to the things that were important to me. And I think that that helped us really listen to each other, right?
If I can just jump in, that is the almost it's a guaranteed issue that pops up. It's usually the man that loses his testimony first. And for some reason, his immediate instinct is, let's go drink beer. Let's have some wine with dinner. You know, let's start seeing our movies. You know,
whatever. It's all those Budweiser commercials in the Super Bowl. You know,
I've even heard of husbands who are like, "Honey, I want to start looking at porn." I mean, it's just, and I understand. I totally get where all that comes from. There's a psychological sort of, I want to break free. I don't want to be held down. There's something symbolic, I think, psychologically, in this impulse to violate some of those things that are considered really the core of Mormon identity. I mean, what's a Mormon? It's someone who dresses nice and doesn't drink and doesn't smoke and doesn't cheat on their wife and doesn't do drugs. And so there's this impulse to be the opposite of that. But what that often does is it makes the believing spouse feel like everything has now caved in. Not only is the spiritual worldview caving in, my hopes for eternity, but now my children are going to have to see beer and wine in the fridge, and who knows whether my husband's going to go out getting drunk and crashing the car. And I'm not saying those are logical, because I'm fully aware that there are millions of people in the world who drink responsibly and drink coffee, and it's no big deal at all. But, Laura, sometimes it's really hard for the disbelievers to show restraint on some of those lines. And I don't know if that's a guy thing showed a lot of restraint.
You're curious about it, but here's the thing. And on the pragmatic side, I've learned a lot from Dan. You end up with a certain amount of currency, right? What do you want to spend it on? If I'm going to ask him to change, do I expect him to change and accept me 100% different than I am? Am I totally different than I ever was? And I understand that's probably at the root of the question is, who am I without the Mormon framework? Who am I? And really, for me, I just wanted to be smart about it. I knew that the minute I went out drinking, none of my Mormon friends were going to listen to me anymore, because that was going to be the reason. And I didn't want that to be the reason. That's not the reason that I decided that the church wasn't true. And I didn't want that to be the scapegoat. And to be perfectly honest, it really has served me well, this healthy lifestyle. I don't regret living the way that I lived. I don't even regret believing for all those years. I feel like, and I think maybe this is key to why I'm not angry. I'm not frustrated with the church. I get frustrated with certain things, but I don't get bitter or angry because I feel like I'm gaining instead of losing. Does that make sense?
Sure.
I feel like I'm gaining more clarity rather than I'm just glad not to be under that anymore, the fear that I felt under Mormonism and all of those beliefs. But we ended up, you know, working with the lifestyle was really important. And recognizing that at the base of the church, all of the church teachings come back to Jesus. And all of Jesus's teachings, even me, I don't necessarily believe in the atonement anymore, but that man, Jesus Christ, walking on the earth as a human, had some of the deepest teachings on love, you know, that's unparalleled with all the spiritual teachers. That man knew love. And that's what Mormonism is really about. So it sounds so simple. And when we hear about it at church, it sounds kind of boring and simple. Yes, yes, love your neighbor. But the truth is that to really love and to use love as your guide for life, it's a huge job. It's bigger than we think it is. But that is the path. So to throw in celestial marriage as a manipulation or a hook that we get caught on is a complete diversion. In fact, if you're looking at the iron rod, that's somebody off on the path calling you off of it. If we're going to give the iron rod a meaning, it's love. Hang on to it and try and let that guide you. You also have to be willing. If you're really going to work through this, you have to be willing to drop your spouse's issues and pick up your own. Because we spent so much of the initial time just saying, he's not doing this, I wish he would do that, what's wrong with this, and he's frustrated with me. And then we have no energy left to really look at ourselves. So the added bonus to going through the counseling and looking at our situation was that we each started to really look inward. What do I believe? What's important to me? And how can I treat him better? How can I come out better in this situation? And we ended up, I think, creating a new business, a new marriage contract.
Let me ask you about that. I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to frame it because I think it'd be kind of fun to frame it this way. Like, Lori, if let's say you guys were sitting down that first day to sort of like, well, here are the terms that I want. And then Dan's like, well, here are the terms that I want. Paint a picture of the terms that were beyond what the other ended up being comfortable with. So if I could have had my way, this would have been the terms. You know, Laurie, you go first. And then Dan, you say, if I could have had my way, this is what the terms would have been. And then talk about how you guys worked through that negotiation. Because this should be an hour in and of itself. The renegotiation of terms is one of the most crucial elements of this whole deal because the whole terms that you started with have now crumbled. So, Lori, what will your ideal terms have been, you know, within reason?
Well, so the funny thing is, I don't think for us it is another hour discussion because what we found was that all of our fears about what our terms would be are different. They weren't real. So when we sat down to actually do it, I mean, day one, I would have said, I want the freedom to go. I want you to support me emotionally while I go off to a 3-day meditation retreat. Well, guess what? He already is supporting me emotionally. And he would say, I'm imagining that first day he would have said, I want you to come to church with me without saying snarky things, you know?
Right.
So those are things we've worked on. But at the end of it, when we sit down and we're wanting to make it work, what it really comes down to is that our marriage is still based on the same things, and they come down to simple values. And our values are the same as they ever were. You know, and the things that we're teaching our kids, they all boil down to, you know, being kind and being smart, respecting others, working hard. I guess that the fear was unwarranted.
Because to live the values that you always believed, it would just be easy to renegotiate because you would just love and respect the other person?
Yes, but I think in order to get there, we had to drop our story. These elaborate stories about Joseph Smith and celestial marriage and this and that. We had to be willing to understand what's important and get out of that story. You know, I recognize that how I'm viewing the church is my own viewpoint, and he has his own, and they can't be the same. They never were the same. We just thought they were.
So, Dan, how would you answer that, the framing that I put up?
Well, very similar. I mean, the fact is that, you know, the main values that have driven our relationship didn't change. I think a part of that was helped by the fact that we didn't have, you know, we weren't super, we didn't try ever to be super orthodox about every facet of Mormon life. So, you know, for us, it was not like kind of hitting every single point, you know, on that spectrum that we had to renegotiate. It's not like we were going to the temple every month together and then all of a sudden she never wants to go and I want to go every week and we have to figure that out. It was never anything like that at all. But at the beginning of all this, I think, like I mentioned earlier, I wanted her to have some sort of positive relationship with the church, even if it was somehow reduced relationship. That's what I wanted then. And what I came to being was that I simply wanted her to respect why I felt a connection. It doesn't matter so much to me anymore what she thinks of the church. You know, I mean, I'm curious about it, obviously, but, you know, what I needed to be able to really function was the respect of, you know, why I felt I wanted to continue to associate with it. And I got that when we went through this counseling, we got to that position. I felt that's where I ended up. And you know, much of the, you know, like I said, I never wanted her to feel forced into anything. So I didn't want her to come to church because she felt she had to do it because I wanted her to do it. So I pretty much dropped that. She comes when she wants to come, and she doesn't, I go. Some days we don't, we do something else. We've done other things as a family. I've gone with her to some of these, you know, retreats and that. It's, you know, so we're trying to learn about each other more a little bit. And in fairness, she understands the Mormon world very well, and I understand this new world of hers very little, and I feel I need to make more efforts there. But, you know, I don't place expectations on her as far as what she does with the church, because I want her, whatever she does and chooses, to be her choice, and so if she only comes only because she wants to be with us that day, that's still her choice to make. And it's not something I'm forcing on her, and I can sit there in church and be comfortable, even if something really crazy is said over the pulpit that I know is going to bother her and bothers me too, probably. I'm comfortable. I don't wince anymore. And that was what made that hard for a long time, is we couldn't. I felt like I dreaded every Sunday because I knew somewhere or something at church was going to set something off and set off an uncomfortable discussion. And that's gone. It's not that we don't disagree about stuff. We do, but you know, we're not, we don't have an agenda. I don't feel like she has an agenda towards me and I have one towards her. We can just kind of, you know, here's our different views about it. The only thing really, that was kind of Mormonish that I think was a place I probably couldn't have gone to was drinking. And it's not even the full word of wisdom. I grew up with a father who drank. He was very responsible about it. I never saw him drunk. I'm very well and knew a lot of people who drank there. So I'm well aware of the fact that many people can drink and they're fine with it. But I also grew up around a lot of people who had problems with it. And early in my young life, before I had any kind of belief or testimony of Mormon theology, I just decided I just didn't want alcohol to be a part of my life. And I just wasn't comfortable with that. And so it wasn't a really big issue because it's not like when we were talking about this, she said, oh, I think I want to drink now. But as we had a few conversations where we've talked theoretically about, you know, what kind of changes could we make and what would work. And I've just kind of said, you know, that's one. And we've known other couples and other LDS people who after losing their faith have begun to drink, and most of them do fine with it. And I just said, you know, I'm not, that's something, I'm not trying to keep you Mormon. It's not trying to, you know, it's not even for myself about word of wisdom. I'm just not comfortable with that. And that's been, she's never pushed on that. And you know, maybe my idea will change at some point. You know, we both agree to have open minds about, you know, where things might end, but, it's really been, I felt, and I think for couples going through this, I think to be totally realistic and pragmatic, I think it's unrealistic for a believer to expect a non-believer to keep up every trapping of the LDS lifestyle for the long haul. I think you have to understand that there should be some things renegotiated. It might be, they might not have an issue with the word of wisdom, but maybe they don't want to attend church all the time or something. I mean, it really depends on the person, and I think you have to be flexible to that. At the same time, the non-believer, I think, needs to understand that it's not really realistic to have to expect the believer to give up everything. There's a point to meet in the middle somewhere. And if two people kind of love and respect each other, understand that, I think you can get there. You just have to, I think you can be realistic about what's important to you and be honest and fair. I'd like to see more people get there. I think just what happens is that people, everything happens at the same time and it messes up. So I'm very glad that Laurie did not announce that she disbelieved and grab a beer at the same day, because then I would have thought, okay, what's going on? Is it really a theological concern, or does she just want to have a beer?
Yeah.
You know,
it muddies it.
It does. And so I'm glad. And some couples, I guess, can't turn back the clock if that's already happened. But, what she said, there's a certain currency and you want to make sure that, you don't want to muddy the waters in terms of what's really going on.
Well, and I think in Mormon terms, it's, you know, by their fruits you shall know them. So if losing your Mormon faith makes you a miserable person to be around, if I turned into this nasty woman,
yeah,
you know, who wants to be around that? Nobody. And that's just proof that it doesn't work. Like, then you cling to the church even more.
Yep.
So as the non-believers, the person trying to navigate an exit, you have to be aware of that. You know, and it's hard because it's painful and it's frustrating, and you lose everything, falls out from under you, and you're trying to figure out what to keep and what to lose. And I guess moving slowly and gently through that is really helpful. Yeah. Really helpful.
Yeah. So, Dan, this is a real quick question, but is it sad to go to church alone without Lori?
Depends on the day, really. it depends on what's said, because some days are, whoa, man, I'm glad she wasn't here. it's funny. And here's an interesting point of our timing that was interesting for our experience, is that all this was happening.
Wait, let me guess. Proposition 8,
right?
how did I know?
We had Proposition 8. Now, what was funny about that is that both of us agreed on that. We both were against it. Like I said, one among a few other disconnects I've had with the church for many, many years is I'm politically kind of liberal. And I actually, that happened to me after I came home from a mission. So, it wasn't like something that was a part of like losing faith. It was just kind of where I developed and grew. And so, and there's this whole, we've lived in California all of my professional life. And so we were here for Prop 22, which made us both very uncomfortable, but we were both much more in the church at that time. So we kind of stayed out of it. But we're kind of uncomfortable with it. When Prop 8 came around, we both really solidified our view that, you know, we just don't agree with the church on this at all. And what made it so that, in a way, that was good because we had something related to Mormonism that we could be united on. We at that time, there wasn't a lot else that we could be, that we felt we could discuss in a united way. But this was. So that was good in that respect. It made it a little harder for me as the person who was kind of the believer wanting to stay, because now I'm having to say, like, to sell the case for a church that's, like, you know, actively doing this big thing that we both really disagree with. It kind of made my job harder, sadly, but, you know, that's just what it's.
I have to say, though, that Dan's made, when I go to church, he's made it really easy. So part of accepting that, you know, his part of not trying to push me into a specific belief has given me the freedom to come and not feel pushed or prodded at all. And so if something crazy is said from the pulpit or something very literalistic, he'll look over at me and he'll give me a big wink and we'll just kind of smile. And it's just nice to know that you can be validated for thinking whatever you want to think and appreciated for making the effort to be there. You know, right. It's been a good balance that way.
Right.
It's a, there is some days though, I have to, it's not so much a sadness, but I have a small relation to how I've heard people who are single late in life or divorced, who are kind of like outside that core nuclear family ideal Mormon model, and how uncomfortable they feel. I've heard a lot of people talk about that, and I'm not in that position. You know, I'm married, and you know, but you know, there are many Sundays that I'm there by myself, just with my kids, and you know, I sometimes think that, you know, am I a real Mormon family here? You know, because there's all the other families that both are there, but you know, that's more of a cosmetic thing, and it's just something that occurs to me at times. It doesn't make me sad. It's kind of a more, I spent years in the church, you know, looking the part of a normal Mormon while feeling inside, you know, maybe I'm not really a great Mormon, you know, because like I said, I had this young life where I just didn't have a lot of, you know, doctrinal knowledge, and I, you know, in my adult life, I've had this liberal approach to it, and, you know, but there I was with my wife and my great-looking kids and playing the part. So now it's almost like a more out-in-the-open thing. I'm not in a typical situation, and that's obvious to everybody that's the case. It's not like we stood up and told our whole ward all these details and everything, but, you know, people... we've been in our ward now for 3 years, and people have gotten the message to understand. And you know, there's no hiding it. I'm not in a traditional situation, and that's fine. You know,
I don't want to speak for you guys, but I have to say that once it was clear to family and friends in the ward that I had a non-traditional LDS family, there was a huge burden that I felt lifted from my shoulders. Not because I wanted to get out of anything. I mean, I still, personally, we still do scripture study. We still do family home evening. We still, obey the commandments and go to church. But for some reason, a lot of that guilt and pressure got lifted. Even though I wasn't looking to stop obeying the commandments, I just didn't feel so horrible for not living up to all the things I felt like I should have been living up to. It's just like, well, we're never going to be that family, but we'll be what we can, you know?
There's this funny thing that happens when you become really aware of who you really are, and you just own it and you live it. It becomes, what's the word I'm looking for? There's just a peace there. There's a peace and an integration. And for the first time, you feel worthy and you feel whole. And that's the irony there. You try so hard to be worthy, to be whole, to do everything perfectly. And the minute you say, well, this is who I am right now, then all of a sudden you feel that intense peace come over you.
Yeah. That's ironic.
Yeah. The other ironic thing is that as we've worked on this, and I've given Dan all of this space, and he's given me space to do our things, as he's given me more space to go off and study Buddhism and yoga, he's studying more. And as I've given him complete support and space to go to church, I am happier there when I go. And I'm embracing the cultural things about, I used to hate the Mormon culture. Well, now I'm just so grateful to get my hands in a pile of bread dough and my aunts, I learned this all the way back centuries ago. And, you know, I'm proud of my Mormon heritage, you know, and part of my fear was that someday somebody would hear a podcast like this or read a blog post and I'd get excommunicated, you know, and I realized that it doesn't matter. Or at times I thought maybe I should take my name off the list. Is it confusing to other people? But what I realize is it doesn't matter where my name is, because part of me is just always going to be Mormon. It's in my blood. It's in my culture. It is my culture. Can I take from that the things that still work, the things that are still really sweet to me, and use those? And so it's come full circle for me and healed a lot of the pain that I felt from the lack of transparency within the church.
Wow. Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.